Coming up on Tech News Today, Samsung's big mystery finally unveiled. Is it a portrait television? And who's buying tech companies? You might be surprised who's looking to. And the Internet of Things gets organized. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, January 8th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's why we love our cloud-based phone system by RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 a month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. Buy one desk phone, get a second phone free up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. And by Squarespace, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com, use offer code TNT1, and they recently launched a developer platform for complete code control. And by Lantronics, maker of the XPrint server, print from your iPad, iPhone, or any iOS device to virtually any printer. For more information, visit xprintserver.com/twit and enter the code TWIT to receive free shipping on your order. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zachter.
I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm still in a temporary location, but we still have 12 News Fuse stories for you because of CES. Sony shook things up at CES yesterday by announcing new 55 and 65-inch 4K TVs, as well as a 56-inch OLED 4K TV prototype. Wait, everybody's doing 4K TVs. That wasn't the shakeup. No, it was the 4K distribution system that features Sony Pictures content and other stuff, so you actually have something to watch in 4K, right? Was that it? No, wait, no, it was a phone. Nobody announces phones at CES anymore, but Sony isn't nobody. Something. Anyway, the Xperia Z is a 5-inch quad-core Android phone with NFC and a 13-megapixel camera and water-resistant.
Oh, whatever, Sony. Intel is talking some big talk at CES as well. The company says that by the end of 2013, $599 touch-enabled Ultrabook laptops, will be on the market, and that devices will be required to support touch input. But that's not all. Intel is also promising functional all-day battery life. If this is all true, we're looking at obviously lower-priced PC market with prices matching tablets. And with touch capabilities, the line between Ultrabook and tablet is ever less clear.
This year's CES is the first not keynoted by Microsoft in a long time. So to ease the transition, Steve Ballmer made a surprise appearance at Qualcomm's keynote to show off Windows Phone 8 and RT. Of course, the two operating systems run on Qualcomm chips. As for Qualcomm news, CEO Paul Jacobs announced the Snapdragon 800 series processors, which he says will be faster than many laptops.
Valve unveiled their gaming product codenamed Piston. It's a modular PC designed for playing PC games on a television. Valve worked with Xi3 to develop the machine, which is the size of a grapefruit. No other details or internals, availability, pricing, anything like that was given, though.
AT&T's got some bragging rights. Its unit sales topped the 10 million mark for the first time in history during the fourth quarter of 2012. It set a 9.4 million record the previous year. The company pins those good numbers on the best quarterly sales of Android and Apple smartphones, including the launch of Apple's iPhone 5. Back in September, AT&T had announced that the newest iPhone was officially the fastest-selling Apple device ever. That was even before Apple announced the same thing.
People of Chelsea and New York City, listen up. Google's going to give you free Wi-Fi all over the Chelsea neighborhood. The service is a partnership of Google and the Chelsea Improvement Company and will be the largest contiguous Wi-Fi network in the city.
People used to say only Nixon can go to China, but Tim Cook says, F Nixon, I'll go to China as many times as I want. Just 10 months after his heralded first visit to the People's Republic, Cook returned to meet with Miao Wei, China's head of industry and information technology. John Poshofsky of All Things D wondered if Cook might have time to squeeze in a visit to China Mobile and try to get them to carry the iPhone.
Is that a direct quote, Tom? F. Nixon.
I believe, no, it's not a direct quote. I'm paraphrasing.
Poor man, he's deceased. Windows Phone fans rejoice. Both Verizon and Sprint have announced they're expanding their support of Windows Phone. Microsoft announced that Sprint intends to bring two Windows Phone handsets to its network by this summer. Previously, the rumor had been to introduce just one, so this definitely seems promising. Verizon is adding the Samsung ATIV Odyssey to the list of Windows Phone it offers.
Things you need an internet. 10 companies, including Logitech, Active Mind Technologies, and Ouya, have formed the Internet of Things Consortium. The nonprofit consortium will focus on getting home automation, entertainment, and productivity devices to connect to each other.
Ah, it's like misconnections for things. Sling Media's parent company Dish rocked the video world yesterday with their inclusion of Sling functions in their commercial skipping primetime recording Hopper set-top box. And now Sling itself has a couple of announcements. The Slingbox 350 and 500 owners will soon get the ability to sync photos and videos with a connected USB drive. Sling also will release the Slingbox Companion social TV app that makes recommendations and then works like a remote to find the shows on your television.
On stage at the CES 2013 keynote, Panasonic showed off an OLED TV manufacturing using 3D printing technology. The specs: 56 inches, half an inch thick, weighs less, a lot less than other LED sets, and in theory, 3D printing technology should help bring down prices on OLED TVs going forward. Not surprisingly, Panasonic CEO Kaihiro Tsuga didn't share any details on price or availability.
$8.3 billion. That's the amount of profit Samsung Electronics estimates it's earned in the last quarter. That's a new record for the company. So, of course, the stock was down 1.3% yesterday. Samsung has shipped about 63 million phones overall. Its Galaxy line is a winner, with the S3 likely to have shipped 15 million units, while the Galaxy Note 2 moved 8 million units.
Sell on the news, I guess. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Ring Central. When we put together the new Twit studio up in Petaluma, we wanted to have a phone system for people to have at their desk. We didn't want to run a big old PBX system in the basement, all that stuff. So we decided, because Russell told us to do it, to go into the cloud with Ring Central. Zero startup costs, no hardware to install or maintain in the basement, none of that PBX hardware. And Ring Central allows us to easily customize all of our call handling. Producers can get their voicemail in their email. We can get all our fax messages right on our smartphones. And Ring Central offers all-inclusive pricing, as low as $20 a month per user. Start right now with a 30-day risk-free trial and get a special offer because you're listening to this show right now. When you buy one desk phone, get a second phone free. Up to 20 phones. So call this number designated for our listeners, 800-543-9980. That's 800-543-9980. Once again, 800-543-9980. Or you can also go to ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. I wouldn't have any room for PBX stuff around me right now anyway. Still in my temporary setup, not in the actual studio, but audio listeners seem to not have noticed. I got a few people who gave me feedback saying the show just sounds like it always does. So I'm glad to hear that. The bandwidth is working. To help us discuss the stories of today, I want to welcome in an old friend of mine, Rafe Needleman, platform advocate at Evernote. Welcome to the show. Rafe, good to have you back. You're not at CES this year either. Neither one of us are.
I'm not. I'm in the space pod down here at Evernote.
Is this the orbiting Evernote satellite?
Check this out. Wait a minute. I'm going to get the full effect here.
Whoa. High ceilings.
I know. Nice. They built me a studio. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that's very cool. Well,
eventually I have to start using it.
Yeah, I should think of doing that myself. Yeah. Let's start off by talking about Samsung's big press announcement. Did we get any Wolf Boys yesterday, Ayaz?
I don't know.
I don't think we did.
I know there was a lot of weirdness at the Qualcomm thing because I think Archbishop Qualcomm Desmond Tutu showed up. But Big Bird was there, but no Wolf Boys, at least on Twitter that I've seen. But Samsung had a huge press event. They announced all kinds of things like quad-core processors and TVs, Evernote on refrigerators, cameras. But I'm going to focus on the standouts because Samsung's been teasing us about this TV for a long time, and they introduced its UN85S9 85-inch 4K TV. That's a mouthful. It's housed in this giant metal frame that kind of looks like an easel. The TV can be tilted up or down, but Gizmodo noticed that the frame isn't removable. So if you don't like the way this thing looks, well, you're kind of out of luck. That's just the way it looks. The frame houses a 120-watt 2.2 speaker system. It also has Samsung's new smart hub software. It's got S recommendation for video. I'll talk about that in a second. Voice control. It's going to launch in spring. It's going to launch in March with no pricing yet available. Samsung also showed off its smart TV interface, which looks a bit like the Xbox 360. It's got a lot of boxes up there. Video discovery. This is a big one. This doesn't have a name yet, but what it lets you do is have a single search, and this television will pull content from your cable box as well as Netflix, Vudu, Blockbuster, Cinema Now, and a whole bunch of other services. When the service launches in the spring, it's also going to be available for certain Samsung mobile devices. And then also, the television is watching what you're watching, so it's going to be able to recommend new shows for you if you want. The Verge says they tried it out, and the interface is a bit sluggish, but these seem like the major ones. Rafe, you seem to be very excited about the refrigerator, though, that has Evernote.
We couldn't do the show. Yeah, so Evernote does – we love Samsung. We have a lot of deals with them to put Evernote on devices and computers. And as an experiment, they've embedded Evernote in one of their smart refrigerators, which the stories have got it just didn't get the whole thing, which is we're just experimenting with it. We hope it becomes a product at some point because it's kind of cool. And at Evernote, we're giant foodies, but it's not actually a product yet. We just love what Samsung does with Evernote. That's all. But I love the idea of having Evernote on my fridge because it's so much easier than Velcroing an iPad to the front of the fridge.
Can we go back to the Easel TV? Can we just address this?
I'd love to.
Yesterday, Jason and I were sitting. You know, we weren't just sitting around. We were working, and he goes, "Oh, so this is finally that TV." You know, that we were all wondering what it was going to look like, and we're both sort of looking at it like, "But what is why? Why does it have all that stuff? And why has it got the big? It's like this frame that it's not really fitting in, not only on the bottom but then over the top." And it's not removable. I mean, I earlier this year spent a lot of money on this, you know, like 3.1 surround system where I've got a center speaker. Mm-hmm. So it's really important for me to get the TV up and off of whatever, you know, the entertainment center it's sitting on so that I've got this sort of center channel. And this already is just like, now this is a complete mess. I would never use this.
Are they going to sell this thing, or is this just a design study? Because I agree with you. That looks like that would only work if your living room is furnished with beanbags.
It's right? going to launch in March. It's wow. supposed to be a real product.
It almost only works if you don't have any sort of set-top boxes connected into right. the TV whatsoever. Because, you know, I mean, it's easy for us to do that now because we have stands the TV rests on. This is so freestanding that if you have any cables coming out of the back going to another stand that has all of your set-top boxes, it's going to look really weird. If you don't have any of that stuff, it might look pretty slick.
You guys are
supposed to use smart TV, Jason.
Right, exactly.
Just with the Ethernet, and then
that's all you need.
All of your television needs will be solved.
Right.
You guys are such killjoys. It's an unprecedented design, right? We've never seen this. Maybe for good reason, because you would have wires sticking out every which way.
And can we get back to why did they use a portrait? Like, why was the whole portrait thing part of this? Their kind of design dialogue for the run-up to this.
Ayaz, did you mention that we actually they actually talked about the ability for people to watch two different programs at once?
No, I didn't. I wasn't even aware of that. Tom, could you fill me in on that?
I don't know if it's part of the shipping product. I'm pretty sure it's not. I think it's a part of a prototype. But they talked about you would have to wear special glasses, so it's doomed from the start, that would have headphones built into them. But two people could be watching this 4K TV and see different programs.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, it sounds like
it's using 3D technology, right? So the left eye gets one show and the right eye gets another, and then one person is wearing left eye glasses and the other person is wearing right eye glasses.
And with 4K, you can deliver two 1080p signals.
Ah, I see.
I think there's a Sony PlayStation
and
television.
And at 240 hertz, it could actually be fast enough.
There's a PlayStation television that does it already, I think. If you have, it's a niche product, but I guess you want to have as many, you know, bells and whistles as you can on a product like this. It's just, I think this is a showpiece thing, right? This is an enormous television. It's got 4K resolution, so that's going to be their big hook. But it's incredibly impractical, unless there's some kind of cable management built into the housing. I think maybe.
We didn't get a price or availability, did we?
No pricing on this yet.
Well, and also, I mean, maybe that whole easel thing is just temporary. Maybe that just is some sort of a CES thing. But that's incredibly foolish, if so, because it's getting so much press for this sort of bizarre housing around the TV. So if it's actually a TV that's, you know, really wonderful and thin and all that good stuff, and the easel was just for promotional purposes, they're getting press for all the wrong reasons.
That's right.
Is it a touchscreen? I want an 85-inch touchscreen that I can throw my body against.
You and Steve Ballmer. Let's move on to
it's a word picture I don't want to go to.
People showing up at CES shopping for tech companies. O'Malik has an interesting post up about the New Guard. Not the regular suspects, right, Sarah?
Yeah, this is a great read over at GigaOM. Just how acquisitions are changing. You know, it used to be if you were a tech startup, you're doing really well, you had some traction with users, you could hope to be picked up by Facebook or Google or Yahoo or Microsoft or maybe even Apple or Amazon. And that's all still sort of, it's certainly true. It's not that those companies aren't interested in startups anymore, but the companies, the larger companies that have the money to spend on startups, either for talent acquisition or tech acquisitions or both, have really expanded. He cites two examples, Avis buying Zipcar just a couple weeks ago it was certainly in 2013 for $500 million. Today, Athena Health announced that it was paying almost $300 million on a startup app service called Hippocrates. And you can look at something like a company like Starbucks last year with a huge partnership with Square. Starbucks is, you know, they sell coffee and food, right? It's like they've got many, many stores all over the world, particularly a very large concentration in the U.S. Everything's going really well. You know, does a traditional retailer really need technology? Well, Starbucks says yes. We see where the future is going, and that made a lot of sense for them. And it was technology that it made sense to partner up and in some other companies' cases acquire rather than build internally. Malik also notes that, you know, thanks to social media, Twitter and Facebook are the big ones, but a variety of social media, the internet is where people go to voice their complaints and their concerns. So if you've got some sort of a local branch of a retailer doing wrong by their customers, well, everybody's going to hear about it. So this is the sort of thing that you have to attack on a larger scale. And traditional retailers, let's say, a retailer like Macy's, right? The big department store, they've been around forever. You know, can I really go to Amazon and have the same experience as Macy's? No, not right now, but they're getting closer. And at some point, some company like Macy's is going to have to figure out how do we compete with the e-tailers that are eating our lunch. What do you all think? I mean, as a startup entrepreneur these days, can you sort of assume, hey, anybody might come to us and ask?
It's safe to assume that the number of avenues, the exits, there are more of them. And it's been this way for quite a while, but they're kind of slow. UPS has had a development fund for a while. I don't know if it's still active, but, you know, back in 10 years ago, I was writing about them and meeting with the people from UPS who were looking to buy technologies. And other companies do as well. I mean, almost every business out there could make better use of information. It's just a question of whether they are comfortable with the not invented here technology and with, you know, the energy that you get from young entrepreneurs and young tech entrepreneurs.
Ayaz, what do you think? Is this do you think 2013 is going to be a big year for the old guard, if we want to call the companies that, realizing that they need to expand technology and startups are the way to go?
I mean, I could see that happening because developing in-house seems like such a hassle for some of these older companies. I'm just thinking about when Walmart bought Vudu. I didn't see that as a great idea originally, but it made a lot of sense because Walmart had a distribution model that was tremendous. They'd been trying to get into that video-on-demand service for such a long time. They had a failed service that tried to compete with Netflix, and that didn't work, and they moved into this. So I think that it seems like it makes more sense to go, okay, if we try to develop this in-house, we might not have the either the foresight or the ability to figure out what exactly is the market need, because these companies are so large compared to these smaller startups where you can go, okay, they're very focused. They probably have a better finger on the pulse of the market. Maybe that's the way to go. And I think this year might be the year that it happens a lot.
I just hope they do it right. I mean, these aren't always saviors. I mean, Avis might do a great job with Zipcar, but Comcast bought Plaxo, for example, and I don't know. I don't see how that was a mainstream smart purchase for Comcast. So
yeah,
they don't always work out.
We'll see a lot of failures like that. I think you're absolutely right, Rafe. I mean, Time Warner and AOL is the template, you know, writ large for that sort of thing. But for all of those examples, there's also examples that do work out. Not everyone is going to. It'll be interesting to see which ones do. I don't really have a sense of how this is going to play out. I mean, it seems like most of these companies, like the Best Buys of the world, have just tried to roll their own up till now. And I'm excited to see more innovation. I'm excited to see, you know, these little startups with innovative ideas roll into these bigger brands and see what happens. It'll be cool. Go ahead, Rafe.
I lost my train of thought. Never mind.
That's all right. If you get your train back, let me know. Let's talk about the Internet of Things. It's kind of a similar situation where everybody's talking about not just RFID anymore, but devices that communicate with each other so that your things have the internet built into them in a way that makes sense, not just, you know, the classic version of the microwave that has the internet and what the heck am I going to use that for. Active Mind Technologies, which makes Game, Basis Science, Coin, Keys, Logitech, Movi, which makes Control TV, Ouya, the Kickstarter project for an Android-based gaming machine, Polycontrol, SmartThings, and Ube, all teaming up to form the Internet of Things Consortium. And the idea here is to find ways for products and services to work together. So things like Bluetooth low power, things like low power Wi-Fi. I'm sorry, Bluetooth low energy. It's low power Wi-Fi. Open standards, obviously, will make it easier for your Internet of Things to work if everything can talk to each other on a standard protocol. But also they're talking about business methodology, which I found that quite interesting, to have sort of an open standard for your business plan as well. Consortium is going to hold its first meeting on Wednesday at 5 p.m. at CES in Vegas. So if you're interested in attending, you could actually email them events@eyeofthings.org. Rafe, what do you make of this? It seems obvious that, okay, we're going to make an Internet of Things. We need open standards for communication. But what about this kind of nebulous idea of business standards?
Well, I mean, the obvious need that people have in business is to track all the stuff, especially if they're selling it. I mean, Walmart has been pushing this for a long time, demanding that a lot of its suppliers put tracking tags, RFID tags on their products, so that when they go through a portal like a shipping door or out the front door, then they know what's going on and they can do inventory this way with smart shelves. But we're talking here about smart things, you know, about all the hand trucks or the cash registers, I guess everything that has a chip in it, which is almost everything these days, being able to communicate with other stuff. And I don't know what to say. I mean, it is such an obvious direction that we're going in. It is there's so much opportunity there, and it is such a gigantic opportunity for hacking that, and cracking, that I have no idea where it's going to go. But I predict an exciting but very bumpy and dangerous road for the Internet of Things.
Sarah, do you have any hopes or fears for the Internet of Things?
I have lots of hopes. I think, I don't know if I feel fearful of this. I feel like these sorts of consortiums seem really promising, and often you get a lot of people in positions of power getting together and talking about how things should be better, and I'd like things to just get better. And sometimes this is the first step in what's probably a very long road to anything changing that's going to make the consumers happier. I know that sounds very pessimistic, but that's just usually how I feel when I hear stuff like this.
No, I'm with you. It never turns out as good as you would like it to, or as good as it could, because somebody tries to game the system. You have a more hopeful note for us?
Well, I did until Sarah mentioned that, because I'm thinking about, like, you know, wireless power, and there was all these consortiums to make
that
a standard.
Sorry to bring you down, buddy.
I was thinking, oh yeah, that's going to take off. I've seen it for years. Wireless power is going to be standardized, and it just took forever for it to kind of do that. And I think, for the most part, it's kind of a failure at this point. But I think the technology is getting cheap enough at this point where you could have an Internet of Things, because this term has been bandied about for a while. So the first devices to have accelerometers and all these other things or Wi-Fi, these devices just couldn't handle the price point just was kind of crazy. At this point, with smartphones as basically your display or your interactive unit, and you have all these other devices without screens or a lot of computing power behind it, I think that maybe this could work. I think LG showed off something very similar to this, where they had a refrigerator that can track what you're eating, and they could send something to your cell phone, things like that. So it's going to get there. I guess I'm a little bit more optimistic because I'm hoping that it'll be open and not just stuck to one universe. If it's just LG's products or just Samsung products or just whatever products, that seems to lock people out.
Yeah, you need it to be open. I think this is a good first step for this. It reminds me of the Bluetooth consortiums, you know, CES 2001. It took a while. There was every year it was like, oh, this is the year of Bluetooth. This is the year of Bluetooth. This is the first year we're really hearing Internet of Things at CES touted a lot. So I expect we'll be waiting a few more years before this really starts to become practical, but I'm excited about it. Let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Squarespace.com. Man, Brian Brushwood told the best story about using the Squarespace trial yesterday. His daughter learned about the endangered pandas at school and wanted to make a panda awareness website. So Brian went to Squarespace, launched a site, said, here you go, honey, make one. It looks great. You know, it's she's 8 years old, so it reads like it was written by an 8 year old, but the design is fantastic, and that's the brilliance of Squarespace. Doesn't matter who you are, what your message is, you can get your message there and get out of the way and let it look good. Nobody's going to say, oh, yeah, design is awful, because you've got these great quality designs. And of course, Squarespace does that mobile responsive thing where the design adapts to the screen size that it's being viewed on, whether it's a phone or a tablet or a laptop or a desktop. They even resize your images when you upload them so that they look right on all the screens. And it's fast and easy to use. Drag and drop functionality for all the customization tools, social media integration. You got to go try it out. It's a free trial. You don't have to give them a credit card or anything. Just go to squarespace.com, sign up today, try it out, maybe even import, use one of their import tools to bring in your current blog if you've got one, see what it looks like. And then if you do decide to purchase it, use the offer code TNT1 and get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. That's squarespace.com. Use that offer code TNT1 if you do decide to buy it. Get that 10% off everything you need to create an exceptional website. And we thank Squarespace for their support. All right, Sony announced a bunch of things as well at CES on press day yesterday. What did we hear from Sony, I asked?
Their biggest thing is they're introducing a flagship phone. I mean, they did this last year. They're one of the few companies remaining that actually introduces phones at CES. And we're talking about two Android-powered phones, Xperia Z and Xperia ZL. I want to say X for some reason. Xperia Z. So it runs Android 4.1. It's upgradable to 4.2 after they hit. Both of these devices have 5-inch 1080p displays. They both have 13-megapixel cameras that can record HDR video. So if you ever wanted to do HDR, but in video, you'll be able to do that. It'll support LTE. And inside, there's a 1.5 gigahertz Qualcomm quad-core processor. Now, the Z has all these extra features like flaps. So it's actually water-resistant. You can submerge this device in a meter of water for up to 30 minutes at a time. So if you wanted a really premium product, because Sony says this is going to be at the premium end of the market, you'll be able to dunk this in water. I'm not sure why, but you can. The XL
on
is,
your yacht, I asked.
Oh, I know why. Yeah,
of course, and when you go diving off your yacht there.
It's all, yeah.
There's also the ZL. That's the less premium one. It's a little bulkier. It's got a plastic back instead of the double glass. It's not water resistant, but there's no pricing available yet, and the carriers aren't mentioned yet. Rafe, do you think these devices stand out at all?
It's hard to get excited. For me, anyway, it's hard to get excited about yet another black slab that runs Android. Although I love the hardware. I frankly don't know what I'd do with a 1080p display. I mean, I think you'd have to have your nose like right up on it, right, in order to see the pixel density. But sounds like great hardware. Sounds like great for gaming, which is what these things are, what all that processing power is fantastic for. But can you watch two shows at once?
I guess you could watch them in really poor resolution, I guess. I don't think it's got the ability
split
to do that
screen.
Yet.
I think the next thing, big thing, is going to be the environment-proof phones, because people are always dropping phones in sinks and other receptacles, and it's really important that when it just falls out of your pocket, you don't have to run down to the shop and pay $400 and get a new one. So I think that's a great feature. I'd like to see all phones have a little bit more environmental resistance.
Yeah, I agree with you, Rafe. I have dropped a phone in the toilet in the past. It was very tragic, and
yes.
No amount of rice made that phone come back to life.
She means to dry
you have to take
out
it out
the
of
phone.
The toilet first.
That's
you
correct.
Weren't throwing it at it like a
yeah,
wedding.
No, the rice and the toilet are two totally different things. But and, you know, and you take it into the. This was an iPhone. I took it into the. You know, to a genius at the Apple store, and they've got little tricks where they can look right away and be like, yeah, this is water damage. You know?
Oh, they have moisture sensors to rat you out. Yeah,
oh,
they're
yeah.
terrible. They open it up and the thing is saying, this person's a klutz, you know.
That's right.
Give them give them the refurb crap.
Yeah, yeah. They're like, you're a toilet lady and it's your fault. Exactly. This is not covered under any warranty. But yes, I mean, things happen and you hear about this all the time. And that's, you know, a surefire way for your phone never to come back. The HDR video recording, I'd love to see what that looks like, because HDR in general in camera phones was sort of this neat thing that's gotten really overdone, and now everyone's like, ugh, HDR photos are the worst. That's like the sloppy filter. So I would like to see if that's helpful at all. It's kind of neat, kind of gimmicky, I guess, but at least they're trying new stuff.
Tom, what do you think? I mean, Sony gets like a 1 month lead before a Mobile World Congress. Is this going to be a very cool phone from a month from now?
You know, I feel like Rafe does. No disrespect to these specs. This is a great piece of machinery, but it's just hard for me to get excited about another little black slab. And maybe it's just because I am not excited about HDR video recording. I am not, you know, really into the 1080p screen. I don't need that great of a screen on a small device like that. So maybe I'm just being a curmudgeon, but this doesn't thrill me the way I think Sony would like it to thrill people. But that doesn't mean it won't thrill other people. I think Sony needs to have a little bit of all the attention on them at an announcement. I think they would get lost in Mobile World Congress. Let's talk about 4K TVs, because that's kind of the rub at CES, is that all it's about are new TVs, and every year it's another thing, and this year it's all about 4K TVs, right, Sarah?
Yeah, that's right. Wired had a great article that the gist of it really is, it's not that 4K isn't an amazing technology, it's just really not worth our time and money yet, and the industry has to pretend like it is. We've got 4K was announced last year. I mean, that was the first time I started hearing about it regularly. So these are really expensive TVs. They're going to be the next big thing. It's four times what we're used to with 1080p or 1080 technology. And now they're calling it Ultra HD, because 4K is maybe a little bit confusing for people, but it's all sort of the same thing. And now everybody's got it. You know, it's Sony, Vizio, Sharp, Samsung. We've talked about them earlier in the show. Everybody's got the new 4K TV, but nobody's talking about price. LG was actually one company that did announce a price on an 84-inch OLED 4K TV retailing at $12,000. Now, that's 84 inches, so when TVs get that big, that is the point where you could say, ooh, 1080, I can see some breakdown, right? When you get to a big enough size, that's where 4K starts to shine. But who's spending that kind of... Nobody. That's crazy. That's not consumer stuff.
These things all have to start somewhere, right? I mean, you know, HD was expensive, plasma was expensive, LED was expensive. The question for me is, you know, are people actually going to buy these things? Because there's always something new. Every couple of years, you get a new entertainment technology, and they foist it on us, and the arguments are the same. Nobody's going to buy this stuff. It's too expensive. And 3 years later, it's under a grand, and everybody has it. So is 4K going to be that? And how is our infrastructure going to support this bandwidth? That's my big issue with 4K.
Well, everybody, you could say the same thing about bandwidth, right? Everybody says, nobody's going to be able to get HD video over the internet. The bandwidth just isn't there. It's not and now we're getting HD video over the internet. So the bandwidth will increase too. You know, it won't be pretty. It'll be ugly fights by ISPs. But I think you're right, Rafe. This is just, it's too early, but they have to start somewhere. So I feel like it's, you know, it's natural to react to the hype negatively, because you're like, I'm not going to buy a $24,000 TV. But in a few years, that will come down. I personally would skip 4K and wait for 8K. I mean, you're going to have to wait 10 years for it probably. But, you know, why do the jump from 1080p to 4K when you know another one's going to be coming down the pike?
Well, and also
I'm waiting until you can paint a TV on a wall of any size. That's what I'm waiting for. That's what I want.
Realistically, you know, when I said 84-inch TV, you know, some of the folks in chat room said, wow, that's awesome. Another one went, what? That's crazy. My living room cannot support anything that big. I could maybe support, I don't know, something up to about 60 inches, right, before it just gets ridiculous. At 60 inches, it's not worth it to me. I don't notice the difference. And that's the reality I think we have to think about is, sure, 4K is cool and it is better and the prices will come down, but... when you have diminishing returns with your eyes, which is what this is all about, Sometimes I wonder if it's technology evolution just for the sake of having something to talk about at CES.
I mean, television manufacturers have to make something that makes a profit for them at this point.
Yeah.
These are such commodities. They've gotten so cheap. The profit margins are just absolute nonsense when it comes to this. If they don't have something amazing, because 3D just wasn't it. Okay, 3D did not make a dent like the electronics industry wanted it to. 4K does offer a lot of resolution that you could really enjoy, but you're right about the sizes. The sizes start getting a little ridiculous. Unless you have a room that's like 30 feet large and you're 30 feet away from the screen, you won't be able to appreciate half of these things. Unless you want to have four or five different things up at once, I'm thinking we're probably going to see these really expensive things like in all kinds of sports bars and places like that where you can have giant televisions, but you just only have to have one instead of having like 15 different panels up.
All right, let's finish off with a related topic, which is what is CES for anyway? I mean, the reason we see all these 4K TVs hyped is partially because it makes good headlines for tech writers, but also because the manufacturers are trying to get the retailers to buy the televisions and put them in their stores, and they got to keep ahead of the wave and say, hey, we've got the next new big thing. You want to be striking deals with us. The CES Death Watch, though, has been a big story. Amazon, Google, Apple, Facebook, not there. You hear everybody talking about that. That's thrown around a lot. They never have been. They use social networks to do their own events and go direct to the people. Matt Honan from Wired yesterday wrote that CES is behind because it's a hardware show and we live in a software world. It's an app world. Matt Buchanan at BuzzFeed echoed a lot of these sentiments and added that Kickstarter is another drag on trade shows. Ouya didn't wait for CES to show off its new platform. It went directly to people for funding. Alexia Stotsis over at TechCrunch even said maybe, in what I call a little L-Train girl logic from Brooklyn, maybe CES is so uncool, it's cool.
No.
God, when the hipsters invade CES, we're done for.
So
it's like
there
the
was
only
that
way we get around Vegas will be on a fixie. Forget it.
Then there was the Qualcomm keynote. Which replaces the Microsoft keynote. Steve Ballmer showed up, and so did all kinds of other crazy stuff. The Verge has a great summary write-up with lots of screenshots, not only of the keynote, but also of their reactions on Twitter. There was Big Bird and a guy dressed in Big Bird's skin talking to Big Bird. There were some bad actors. Scroll farther down. It gets really weird. There's Ballmer running out. They called it the Internet of Everything. Not just the Internet of Things. There's that guy with the Big Bird skin on. So my question here for the panel, let's go round the horn. Is anything killing CES? Is it software? Is it social networks? Is it Kickstarter? Or is CES just fine? Rafe, start with you.
It has a purpose. It's a great place to get together with all your chums. And I think a big company like Samsung or any large electronics company can do a lot of very efficient meeting and business at a place like this. However, I agree that it is very smart for Apple and maybe even for Microsoft and other large companies to stay away. They do not need CES to get press. That's not what it's about. And I'll guarantee you there's a lot of people from Microsoft there doing business. They just don't need the booth. They make their own press. Like Apple has for a long time. I've always said that if you want to launch a product, don't go to a giant trade show. I've been advising startups to take a hard look at going to a show like Demo, which costs a lot of money, and instead make your own buzz. Because why compete with a million other pretty models when you can have the whole bar to yourself if you do it on your own?
Ayaz, you're going to CES. You didn't have to go, but you want to go. What's bringing you in? What's still pulling you into CES?
It's effectively because my friends from like the East Coast are coming in. That's basically why. I'm just going to network and hang out with my friends.
To Vegas to party.
Exactly. Like, I'll be on TNT every day, but I will be like probably with sunglasses on or something.
And then just the hardware is like an added bonus.
Oh yeah, that's just icing on the cake.
I feel like a lot of other people do the same thing.
I think this is probably the last.
There's a lot of complaining about CES and my feet hurt and the show's so big and blah blah blah, but people have a lot of fun. It's a big networking event. And, you know, we're not covering it for Twit this year the way that we have in years past. But in the last couple of years, Leo and I, for iPad Today, have walked the part of the floor that's all sort of dedicated to iDevices and, you know, third party. They've got all sorts of really interesting, some of it is junk, but some of it is very innovative add-ons and stands and sort of musical third party devices, and some of it is really kind of fun. And those are the manufacturers that I get excited about, because they really do get a lot of interest. They get a lot of people looking at their products, taking their cards. They might, end up in, stores somewhere in the next year or so. So I think that there's definitely a purpose to CES. I think some of the bigger companies with all the flashiness tends to, give us all a lot of fatigue. But it's not as if there's nothing to it anymore. Even in something, the iOS market, just to use the same example, I mean, that's all apps and software, but it ends up allowing a lot of hardware manufacturers to rise above.
Yeah, one of the things about the everybody at one trade show is you can take a look at all the different technologies from the different companies right then and there. So instead of being stuck at Samsung's event and they were just going to see Samsung stuff, you can actually go out on the floor and go, okay, the Samsung's 3D looks like this, or their 4K looks like this. Let's look at LG's version of it, because you can have that direct comparison throughout that day. I mean, I think that that's very important in being able to compare things, because I know a couple of years ago when I saw, I think Toshiba's 3D without glasses, they had a really good technology. But there's no way you could express that in a blog post or a video. You kind of have to go see it.
I think CES is going to continue as a trade show. I don't think it's in any danger of being killed, because you do need a place for the retailers and the manufacturers to meet up. But its hype factor may be declining. I think that's what we're experiencing. Let's finish up with a randomizer.
Randomizer.
David Bowie has an iTunes exclusive single out on his birthday, a birthday present for you. I think a lot of people, I'm a David Bowie fan, so I was excited. I didn't know he was coming out with something new. He's going to have a whole album coming out. It's the first single out of that. And he goes straight to iTunes with it. Now, David Bowie, according to this Next Web article, predicted that labels would be gone by 2012. I don't think that's happened. I know it hasn't happened. But yeah, I'm curious. You guys care about this?
Yes.
David Bowie's
awesome.
I wish he was on Spotify, but, whatever. I don't know if I'm going to pay for a track, but it's pretty cool.
You can watch the video on his website. He's got a suitably weird David Bowie-esque video.
Awesome. Okay, I'm there.
Yeah, go check it out. Let's finish off with what's incoming.
Oh, are we doing the third ad?
Oh, yeah. No, sorry.
TNT's over. Look at us. We're crumbling.
I'm falling apart. Boxes about to fall on me. Yes, we absolutely, before we do feedback, we should thank our other sponsor, Lantronics. Tell you what, I'm going to use Lantronics much more in this big house than I did in the old house because it gives you wireless print server easily. You just plug it into the Ethernet. I'm just going to plug it in the garage. I'll be able to print from any of my iOS devices to virtually any printer I want, my printer included. You go to xprintserver.com/twit, enter the code twit, and you can receive free shipping on your order. Home edition is $99, supports up to 8 USB and 2 network printers. That's more than I need at home. Office Edition is $199, gives you 8 USB and unlimited network printers, allows your USB printers to be shared with all the users over a network. So you don't have to mess with should I buy a new printer that has Wi-Fi? You got a USB printer that works with Lantronics? Just get Lantronics. Great for your home, great for your office, and it even works with large multifunction printers like mine. I've got one of those scanner printer things. Go check it out, xprintserver.com/twit. And like I said, use that offer code twit to receive free shipping on your order. It's just a little box, plugs right in, easy to set up. You can print from your iPad, you can print from your iPhone. Visit xprintserver.com/twit. Use the code twit at checkout, and we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Now let's do some.
Let's do it.
Incoming message.
Sounds good. We got a message from Steve. He says, "Hey TNT crew, my main problem with the new Project Shield from NVIDIA is that it smacks a little of the Sony Xperia Play Android handset that promised Android plus PlayStation games with a dedicated controller form factor, and that concept bombed. Do you know anyone who bought one? Because I don't. Even my friends who are hardcore PlayStation lovers and Android users didn't bother, as they had a PSP already. I'm struggling to see who this thing is aimed at." Rafe, did you get to see the Project Shield news that NVIDIA?
I saw the news. Yeah, it looks actually pretty cool. Again, it's if the software is there, which why wouldn't it be? Because it's Android, right? It is Android. Yeah, it is Android. Then it'd be pretty cool. The thing about it is it's a convertible device. You can either play on the screen or you can beam it to your TV. And I think you can even beam it to a 4K TV over wired, which is kind of neat. So is this the future of the gaming console? Is the whole console becoming this little handheld thing? Why not? And if so, then you can take them anywhere and have parties when you go to a friend's house by hooking your game consoles together. I think that's pretty awesome.
Got another email from Mike the Diplomat, who says, your talk about smart TVs yesterday missed an important aspect, sound. I love my Panasonic Viera, and I was excited to try out the smart TV apps. To my disappointment, there's not a good way to do audio out. The crappy TV speakers don't give me the audio fidelity to hear the unintended fart on Downton Abbey. Okay. Is that a spoiler? that my home theater system does, because I'm only on season two. Until the sound problem is fixed, I'm keeping my HTPC hooked up.
Now, I've run into this problem before, but there is a way to do this. It's using the audio return channel on HDMI. So you can pump all your smart TV apps back to your receiver and hear audio. It's a bit clunky on my Vizio TV. Maybe it's better on your Panasonic. You might want to look into that.
All right, that is it for this episode of Tech News Today. Rafe, thanks so much for joining us. Give a plug to your Evernote-powered refrigerator or whatever else you got.
I'll tell you what, I want to plug the blog that I'm writing about startups, where two or three times a week I take a look at a new startup. In Opportunity Notes is the name of the blog. You can find it at opnotes.com, and it's also a podcast you can find on iTunes and Stitcher.
Excellent. Check it out, folks. Opnotes.com, right?
Yep. OPPnotes.com.
That is it for us. You can find us on subreddit if you'd like to suggest a story. TechNewsToday.reddit.com is the place to go to let us know not only things that you find. You can submit links, but also vote on the links submitted by other listeners so we can get an idea of what kind of stuff you would like us to talk about on the show. We look at it every day. You can also find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, and give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. And I know I said Ayaz was off to Vegas today. And he is off to Vegas today, just after the show. He'll be from Vegas tomorrow, and we'll have Nate Langston on the show from Vegas at CES as well. We'll see you then.